KSCU Santa Clara presents. Robots Attack. Movies. TV. Video games. Comic books. Tech stuff. News. Music. If it is geek, it's on Robots Attack. Participate in the show by commenting on Facebook, tweeting them at RobotsAttackMe, emailing the show robotsattackshow@gmail.com.
That's right, welcome to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara 103.3 FM, the underground sound. I am joined with
now,
is
Robots Attack.
Jason.
That's right, we're back. We're back to bring you the geek all over you. We're going to spray it all over you, and you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. You're going to bathe in it. You're going to soak it all in.
Yeah, of course.
It'll be
as you
fun.
Do.
As you do.
Right.
Because your pores, you know, soak
osmosis
in.
Osmosis will absorb the...
Yeah.
Right.
Science,
mm-hmm.
biology, and chemistry.
With science and technology.
And zoology. And
maybe, yeah. And possibly zoology. And we usually fit a little zoology into our stuff.
Ology of ologies.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, wherever in the world Carmen Sandiego is.
Right.
Maybe after
and
our
if
show.
If she's meeting some manner of ologist.
Yes. Maybe after listening to our show, you'll be able to, you know, get a little bit closer to finding
Carmen Sandiego.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sandiego. Of Carmen.
Yes. Because you already know the way to San Jose, most likely.
It's true.
Yeah.
Unless you're listening to this somewhere else in the world.
No, it's impossible.
It's not possible.
Wait, it totally is.
Not on the radio.
But maybe on the internet.
Oh, the internet. You know, speaking of the internet.
Yes.
And, you know, we are a radio show, but we also happen to have things that go on to the internet.
That is true.
Caleb. Mm-hmm. Let's tell them about the internet.
Well, the internet is a vast connection of... Oh, wait. You mean like about what's on the internet? Okay, so what we do on the internet...
Is there a series of tubes someplace there?
Some call it that, but it's really a more of a layering of webs on top of webs on top of webs. We'll get into that some other time. The main thing is that if you want to get interact with us right now, it's awesome. And you can do it through the World Wide Web. And you can do that at facebook.com/robotsattackshow or go to twitter.com/robotsattackme. Those are the two fastest ways to get a hold of us. If you like email, robotsattackshow@gmail.com is the way to get a hold of us. Those are open in the background. We keep an eye on them. We will post our stories there as well as we go through them so you can kind of see some of the visuals that go along with the things we speak about, because the internet's also made of pictures as well as cats. So
yes,
having pictures of cats, I mean, pictures to go with the stories helps.
Yeah.
With
a lot of our stories tend to have pictures or videos. So
yeah.
Since some of this stuff is kind of like a little bit like kind of like future reaching stuff, like it's a lot of it's demo things. So kind of like to describe it is difficult to see it make sense.
Yeah. So we do our best over the
radio.
We're
a multimedia
waves,
radio show. We've said it before. We'll say it again.
There you go. I like it. And you're going to like it too.
Yes.
All righty. So how you gents been? It's been a little bit since we've had our last show.
Yeah.
What you guys been up to?
Holiday in between. Not a whole lot. Went to a wedding yesterday for some friends. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's one of those nice weddings you go to It's an enjoyable experience for all involved. Like, you can tell that this is about it's a good positive thing. No one's in the background like taking shots and placing bets on how long it lasts. Everybody was celebrating it. It was fantastic.
That's good.
That's great. I've heard about the other types of weddings, but I guess I've only ever been to like the really positive ones.
Same here. So. I've only ever heard about them, so I'm glad I've never actually had to experience this.
Yeah, I guess it helps to roll in good company.
Yeah,
mm-hmm, it's true.
Anything like wacky kind of crazy happened there as far as like, right. Did they do some sort of unique thing?
Was there cartoon violence?
There was no cartoon violence, no, but our
Acme stuff, anvils dropping on people's heads.
Or... No, nothing quite that wacky. Although the priest, it was they were Catholic.
There was a priest?
There was a priest.
That's pretty wacky.
That's old school right there.
He was pretty geeky. Like he actually brought Star Trek and Star Wars references into the into the ceremony. So that was
prepared.
Yeah. He brought his geek game. It was pretty impressive.
Nice.
Okay.
Cool.
I ended up having a really interesting weekend for the holiday weekend, just mostly because I did practically what I do most like big holiday weekends is make big rounds around a bunch of different family groups that are scattered across California. So it's always kind of a whirlwind of driving and sleeping while other people are driving and so on.
So I'm sensing there's a lot of driving.
Yes, there's some driving involved. But yeah, it's always good people and a lot of fun and refreshing in a weird sort of way, even though it has all of the driving. So I can't complain too much.
Nice.
No.
Nice. How about you, Joe? What you been? Did you get up to anything interesting or fun?
Let's see.
How much driving was involved? Number one, driving and/or weddings.
Well, okay.
With
no,
cartoon anvils.
No weddings.
Okay. No weddings.
No,
okay. That's
no cartoon
knocked off.
Anvils and
no,
stuff.
Oh man. Okay. There better be some driving here, otherwise.
I mean, I guess there was normal amounts of driving.
Okay. Well, there
I
you go.
I tried to do as little as possible. So okay. There's normal.
Fair enough. To each their own.
Yeah. Let's see. I saw Tomorrowland.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Like the weekend it came out.
Okay.
And I believe you saw
it. Yeah,
as
I ended
well,
up
Caleb.
Seeing it that weekend. Also, took one of the high schoolers from church to for her birthday to go see it. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I rather liked the movie. I'm surprised it's getting such bad press, honestly. I mean, it's not like.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying it's like fantastic film, but like it's solid. It's not a. Gonna burn the house down, but it was an enjoyable movie. Like I thought so anyways. I heard several people like someone else saw it in at work, and they were like, "Yeah, that movie had no plot." I'm like, it just didn't have a very thick plot. It did. There wasn't no story. There just wasn't like it wasn't like Two Towers like level story here.
Yeah,
that's a lot of plot. Yeah, Two Towers. I mean,
yeah,
yeah.
It's a fair amount.
Books and
lots
of stuff going on.
Yeah. And two entire towers.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say it's a better idea than a movie. Like,
okay.
Its message is really good, but as a movie, like, it has some cool moments, but it's not really a movie. Like,
yeah.
It has a few, like, kind of neat scenes. Like, you can tell. The writers were jazzed to do those parts, but then when they had to connect it all together, it was like, they're driving. Yes. Okay. We'll have some talk in between there. Like
okay.
I can understand the kind of bad reviews. Again, I sort of agree with Caleb. Like it's not a bad movie by any chance. Like I wasn't like, oh God, when is this over with? But I was like, this isn't a well-made movie.
Okay.
Like as a movie.
Do you feel it's where does it rank on the Brad Bird Experience chart?
Compared to his other movies, like it would probably. Well, okay. I've.
Does it feel like he was roped into this?
Well, he came out and said that it wouldn't have happened if he wasn't involved.
Huh. Okay.
So, and I'm.
That could be either way, I guess.
I'm sad in the fact that it's like. A new IP,
which is
and
nice.
The shame that it wasn't as good as I wished it could have been, and
right.
It's not doing as well is kind of sad for like the state of movies because it shows again like people don't want to like
invest in something new.
Yeah, it's like
they roll the dice.
Yeah, companies don't want to take the risk. Like here, this is brand new IP that they spent like a good chunk of money on, and nobody, really. Is coming out to see it. I mean, never mind that it really isn't that great of a movie, but they're not really seeing it that way. Like, they don't really care. Uh-huh. It's like, people aren't coming to see this. Like, well, we can probably show you why they're not coming to see it. No, 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 no. People aren't coming to see it. Quick, let's remake Big Trouble in Little China with The Rock, which is what we're doing. Yeah. So that's like, that was kind of sad. But I am glad, like, I could totally see little kids really liking this movie.
Right.
And, like, the message is really, like, the message is, like, you know, don't give up your dreams, like, keep mm-hmm. dreaming, you know, okay. hope and stuff like that. And so it's like, it's a good message.
It's kind of like Meet the Robinsons in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, I would actually say that that's a fairly apt comparison.
Okay. Yeah, it's just, I just wish it was a better movie.
Okay.
Like, I can almost guarantee when they were, like, coming up with it, had the ideas, like, in the brainstorming room, was like, oh, yeah, and then we'll have these robots, and they'll be seen in this toy shop, and we can do all these things. And it's like, oh, man, that sounds awesome, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this... I'll definitely grant you, it lacks for some certain amount of structure in storytelling. It had, and, like, yeah, it's got a lot of things that I like, but at the same time, like, I can definitely see its flaws going that it has. It's not... It's definitely not Brad Bird's best feature.
Okay. So my biggest question personally, was it fun or just kind of meh having Hugh Laurie in the movie? I'm sensing meh.
Well, he was one of the better parts, but at the same time, his character is... not exactly likable, so you end up kind of like with a mixed bag.
Okay.
It's weird. He gives, like, the best speech in the movie, but it's that classic, like, here's the villain, like, speech, why I'm doing everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But he's, like, I guess that's kind of the other thing, for at least for me, too, was, like, he's a villain, but there's no real... I don't know. It's just weird. Like, it's just...
The crisis is very existential. Like, it's a very...
Yeah, he's
very,
just,
like, big brain, like, concept.
Yeah, okay. he's definitely, like, he's painted as the bad guy and, like, you know, he's doing sort of bad stuff, but it's not really, like, whoa, Darth Vader, that's a bad guy, or whoa, Immortan Joe, that's a bad guy. Okay. Like,
he doesn't strangle many people is what I'm hearing.
Well, and it's just, like, it's not really that kind of, I don't know. It was just really, it's just really weird. Like, again, I think it's not, as a quote unquote movie, it's not a movie.
Okay.
But as an idea, it's a good idea, man. I'm all for it.
A better comic book or television series, perhaps?
TV show they probably couldn't do. Okay. Like,
maybe a mini series, like a 2 or 3 special or something like that, perhaps, but that might be pushing it a bit.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of funny because what I'm kind of hearing is that going and seeing the movie is nearly the same level of enjoyment of just watching the previews for it.
No, it's better than the previews.
Okay.
Because it actually has story. The previews to me, were one of its kind of downfalls. So, like, they revealed nothing about what was actually happening in the movie. It's like, oh, cool things to look at. Yes, that's great. Which I guess is a nice change of pace from, like, say, like the Terminator trailers, where it's like, I think you're giving away the movie.
The entire movie, yeah.
Here, guys. I'm not, like, I'm sure you got other twists involved, but that was kind of big for a trailer. And this one, like, these trailers are just like, I almost don't know what to make of this movie from the trailer. And then I saw the movie, like, oh, it's actually pretty good. So
it comes together better than that, but...
Yeah.
I almost hate saying this, but, like, I almost bet, not because it's a girl, like, protagonist, you know, who's, like, kind of the hero in the story, but, like... I'm terrible at ages, but maybe, like, 13 and under girls will probably love the hell out of this movie.
Okay.
And boys, maybe kind of 50-50, because there's some cool... I mean, I really kind of hate saying this because it is sort of stereotyping, but I'm kind of going off what I've heard from other kids. Like, there's some kind of neat action, so that might interest them, but... if they're not really, like, super into, creativity is a bad way to say it. They might not find this movie that interesting because it really pushes this whole idea of like
changing the world by
be a dreamer, like don't give up on your hopes, like imagination is the key, you know, like that, tapping sort of into that. So if you're
it sounds
kind
like
of,
a plaque like going into Tomorrowland and Disneyland.
It's a highly optimistic view of the future and how we can get there.
If you kind of are on that wavelength, and not everyone is, you know, like it might roll with you a little better, but like if you're just like sitting down and just want to kind of watch a movie, it's probably not going to really blow you away. At least from my point of view. I mean, I enjoyed it well.
It's not
enough,
a veg out movie.
It might be. You're just not.
Okay.
I don't
expect too much from it. And in terms of like, you know, really in depth storytelling or really involved characterizations, it's more, it's more of a concept flick than an actual like movie.
I don't know. I wish I could explain it better where it doesn't sound like I'm like totally hating on the movie. It's just like as an actual movie, like making it and putting it together, it's just not really there. But like as an idea, it's positive. Like, you know, imagination is cool. Dreams are cool. Like that, those are good things to like preach to kids and to people. Like,
It's got fairly good energy through it all, but like it's, It kind of disjointed in the way it comes together.
I think Caleb liked it more than I did as far as altogether. But
which is fair. You're allowed to do that.
Out of 5 stars, what would you give it? I like to do the Netflix rating because their 5 stars isn't perfect. Like, it's, because what is it? Just like, I loved it or something like that?
Yeah, 5 is loved it. 4 is like,
Really liked it.
3 is liked it. 2 didn't like it. 1 is hated it.
Yeah, because I like that because then it doesn't like, then you're not in the, well, you gave that a 10. That like symbolizes perfect. Like, no, it doesn't mean perfection. Okay. It just means I loved it.
How like, how much I liked it. Yeah.
Including all the flaws.
Personal enjoyment value.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say probably 3.5.
Okay.
That's pretty good. Solid. Okay. And you?
So 3 was liked it, right?
Yeah. 2 is didn't like it.
So like 2.5?
No, probably 3.
2.75?
Probably 3, because like I said, when I was watching it, I wasn't like, oh, God, like I don't like this. But there wasn't enough there to make me like, I, you know, I'm
no
up pushing that again.
Arose I gotcha.
But speaking of passion arising.
Uh-oh.
The Witcher 3. Oh, man.
There's probably some passion arising in that.
Yeah.
Did you encounter one of the now well-known passion arising glitches? Or no?
No.
Okay. Well, that's
fortunate. Hopefully not.
Wait, what? Do they like, have, like, vanishing partners? What the heck?
Sort of.
That would be interesting.
Oh, that's terrible and hilarious all at the same time.
It sounds like it's an extension of the Assassin's Creed Unity problem, where like certain elements were disappearing from the scene.
Oh,
but it only apparently happens during one of the Passion Arising scenes.
Okay, no, that didn't happen during. I've only done one of those.
Okay, well, you got more chances
so far. Yeah,
if they don't fix, you better hurry up. They might fix it.
So, oh man, I'd hate for that to happen. But here's something that I like happening. If you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website. Never be without the underground sound. And of course, our pro tip.
Find us faster by searching for our call letters, KSCU. That is unique to us on the globe. 103.3 FM is not unique to anything. It can be an interesting experiment in expanding your horizons in terms of sonic enjoyment. But if you want to find KSCU fastest, do a search for KSCU.
That's right. But yeah, Witcher 3, I've never played 1 or 2. So this was going into this one, I was brand new.
Okay.
You know, so it's a very, very pretty game. Oh, man. Just like seeing the wind like blowing through the trees and like
Yeah, the environments are amazing.
Yeah, riding on horseback and like the weather changing, rain coming, or and like little kids sort of frolicking around in puddles, or people like, you know, going about their business and stuff like that. And it's just like, oh, I just want to stop and look at this. It's so awesome. Like,
yeah.
And the combat is taking me a little bit to get used to. I'm getting a little bit better, but yeah, it's definitely different than
I think they carried a lot of it over from Witcher 2, best I understand. And I played a little bit of that, and it was, I felt like it was really solid, but it does take some getting used to, like, wielding the different elements.
Yeah, like, making sure, trying to get better with, like, doing the combat and comboing, like, with your different signs. And I got, like, tips as I was streaming it. One person was like, oh, you know, when you're fighting a lot of the monsters, don't bother trying to parry. Like, just roll or dodge out of the way. Because they're usually stronger and they'll just like kind of stun you. Like just mostly parry against like humans and stuff like that.
Okay.
So
makes a degree of sense.
Yeah. So when I kind of started doing that, I was doing a little bit better. It's just like, oh, okay, dodge, 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 throw fire, dodge, dodge, swing, swing, you know.
Yeah. What I was kind of wondering right off the bat was since the chunk that I played of Witcher 2, it was like massive kind of really huge action scenes with sweeping visuals of like gigantic castles and things burning all around you and everything like that. It was really something to behold, and it looks like they've kind of went for that in their own way in this, but does it feel like kind of that level of action, or does it feel like they've kind of toned it down compared to the way that sounds?
Well, to be fair, I'm not super far out of the, like, what they call sort of the tutorial zone.
Yeah.
Which is still pretty big. For it's like orchard or something. But so far, there hasn't been any kind of grand scale, like, battles. Okay. It seems like, from the way the story is going, a lot of that stuff has, like, kind of already taken place. So you're seeing some of the aftermath of that. Like, there are areas where it's, like, there's been those massive battles because there's just like mud and water and like dead soldier bodies and, you know,
Yeah, I wondered how close it was after the last game too. I don't know.
Yeah, I forget how long. I know they mentioned it, but
yeah,
that's the one thing right now too is like, I don't really know a whole lot that's going on, but I'm having like the journey is fun so far. Just kind of going through the side missions and...
It was kind of neat, the stuff that I was playing in 2, it felt like they were slowly revealing little things about the characters without actually, like, slapping you in the face with them, and it was interesting kind of treating yourself as a mystery in a weird sort of way.
Yeah, so. I guess in that one he has, like, amnesia or something, what I heard. In the second one, they kind of used that mechanic, and this one he doesn't have that anymore. But,
it's better than him getting amnesia again.
Yeah. Like, oh, man.
I'm just prone to it.
Geralt's got that amnesia again. Oh, Jesus, Witchers.
Every time I have passionate time, bam, amnesia.
Yeah. They do. It is cool, too, like, just interacting with the citizens in the world, too, and, like, their idea of, like, what a Witcher is. A lot of them, like, just, like... hate him, like just hate like Witchers. They'll like spit at him or just like, oh, you're a freak, you mutant, you know. And then there's others where, you know, they're doing all that, and then when they need a Witcher, you know, it's like they're not like, oh, Witcher save us, but you know, it's kind of thing of like, well, okay, we kind of need you right now. And then you have like one of your signs is kind of a like mind altering one. And so you can do that sometimes in dialogue options. And if there's, sometimes it'll work on people and sometimes it won't, you know. It's, I guess it, you know, if you look at it sort of in Star Wars, like sometimes the Jedi mind trick works, sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
Don't
do it on a Hutt
or a Tidarian.
Yeah. But there was one instance where there were like two or three guys in the dialogue conversation. I was speaking with one, and you know, it gives me the option to select like using that sign. And so I did that, And one of the others is like, that guy's just trying to use magic, you know, like, I'm trying to do that stuff on you. Hey, don't do that. Like, oh, that guy's. Like, yeah, it's, okay. It's cool. I'm liking the kind of world that they're creating.
It sounds like a lot of the feel from 2 carried over pretty nicely. Because you've mentioned a lot of the same kind of stuff.
Oh, okay.
But it definitely looks like they stepped the pretty up an extra like 3 notches on this one. So
yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Someone put up a comparison picture of Geralt from the first game to the new, to the current game.
Right.
It's like how far we've come in 3 games, and it's like wow, it's like almost not even the same character at this point. Like,
jeez, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting. Like, I don't think I've ever played a game that showed off maleness as much as that game, just because like in the chunk of it that I played of 2, which wasn't like incredibly far or whatnot, literally 50-50 of it is me with my shirt off. Oh, okay.
Yeah, one of my viewers as I'm streaming it like keeps telling me when I'm not in any sort of danger spots, like, take his shirt off. She's like, take his shirt off. Like, all right, I'll take his shirt off. But I have to put it back on.
Wait, there's a button for that?
Well, it's just unequip your
shirt.
Shirt or your armor. You
Know? That could be bad if you have, like, a wyvern come screaming at you. Like, I should have worn a shirt.
Well, like, luckily, those I can equip, like, during combat.
Okay.
I can't put oil on your... Yeah, this is interesting too.
On your shirtless body.
Yeah.
Grace me up, woman.
Yeah. With this one is like you only get the X number of signs and that's it. Like it isn't like kind of your I guess you know using Dragon Age as an example. Where Wizard has like all these tons of different spells and you know schools you can learn and you know like oh, I want to focus on fire and all these different things. Like this is you got I don't know if it's like 4 or 5 signs and that's it. You can upgrade them, but like that's it. And the trick with this is like you're using a silver sword for monsters and a steel sword against humans and you apply potions to your blades.
I saw another list of items on there. Like, oh, that is actually a pretty clever mechanic.
Just oils, but you apply the oils, and when you kill like a monster, they go into your beastry, and you can look it up, and it'll say like, oh, okay, they're weak to this specific oil, so you can apply that, and so you'll get bonuses for doing damage. And there's certain creatures that like you have to get them. It's like a lot of the wraiths, like you have to throw down this magic trap and when they cross it, it like makes them corporeal.
Yeah.
So then you can actually like hit them and do damage, like kind of keeps them from dissipating and, going off. But yeah, so it's different than, I played a third playthrough of Dragon Age. So sort of comparing that with that, like just the differences of whoa, okay.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like way more hacky slashy, but at the same time, there's so much depth to it that it can definitely pull you down the rabbit hole of trying to figure out every single nuance of the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also it gives the option of to different types of players. It's like, I really want to figure out the optimum solution to this problem, or I've got 80% of this solution. Let's just go for it.
Right.
You can kind of.
I have the sword.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sword still works. Yeah. It kind of, you have both. You can kind of catch both players. Ones that perform more action, those for a little more strategy. And then.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you'll find diagrams for stuff and you can take them to blacksmiths. I'm like, hey, craft me these pants or swords and stuff like that, and
or different types of traps and stuff like that, or
not yet perhaps.
Yeah, I mean it's like they're pretty much they just craft your like equipment and stuff like your armor and weapons and everything, and then you your bombs, you like find out recipes for those. And they do this interesting thing where it threw me off at first, but once you make like a potion or an oil, you don't need the ingredients for it anymore. You just need alcohol in your possession. So then you, when you meditate, mm-hmm. which is how you can like heal yourself, besides a kind of one type of potion,
right?
It'll restock all that stuff. Don't ask me how it does it. I think it's just like, hey, that's just the game
mechanic, you know, game as opposed mechanic to
of how hard alcohol, you know, replenishes your bombs, but and everything else, you know, all these different things. But that I'm fine with that than having to go like, oh crap, I need to go find this number of herb again, you know, like just to make this sort of thing. And the
I
healing.
I say they explain that a little bit better in two, but I can't remember for sure. Like,
I guess
they something about you meditating on the alchemical process or something like that, if I remember right.
Okay. But, whatever. It's a fantasy world. yeah. I'm willing that alcohol can transform into all those things. It's fine.
Alchemy.
Yeah.
yeah.
So, yeah. And there's no, like, healing. Like, there's not, like, you know, you've played Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm.
The healing potion, you just drink it. Bam, you're full. Like, this, it's just, you drink it and your sort of regeneration rate goes up.
Okay.
Faster.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then with this, there's toxicity. So if you drink like too much stuff, you can get all whacked out. And but you can take other things to like clear that out, or you can buff up this sort of
detox
stuff,
detox like, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting because it also since like the in Dragon Age you had a party, you had a group of people that could rotate.
Yeah.
what you do and with this one like. Since
just you,
since Geralt is sort of the party, having him be more like interactive with like what the effects are of the things you're doing is considerably more interesting on a character level. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it changes stuff up. I mean, I could see where it might not interest everyone, just because it's like where like Dragon Age, you had all those different types of characters and classes you could do.
Mm-hmm.
Geralt's just one dude, like he's the Witcher. Here's what he can do. That's it. Like,
yeah.
There's, you know, tricks within those things you can do, but it's not like, okay, I feel like being a wizard now, or I feel like being a thief now. Like,
yeah.
You know, with all these crazy different skills. So it's a game that probably isn't for everyone. Like they might like see it and be like, oh man, that looks so good. You know, I would recommend, you know, check out a stream, check out some people playing it or something. And if you like what you see, I think it's cool.
Sounds good.
Well, I will say, though, the item system is that menu. There's definitely some stuff they could have worked better, but.
Item menus are the bane of most RPG systems, quite honestly.
Yeah, it's. Can be a hassle doing a lot of the stuff in there, but oh well, I've talked enough.
Spinning off from some of the video game stuff, I actually did the Burial at Sea Bioshock Infinite DLC. I played all of that over the last weekend.
Both parts. Okay, great, cool.
And that DLC almost single-handedly restored my appreciation for the writers putting together an ending. Like, you know, go back to Infinite, didn't dislike the ending, but I didn't think it was nearly as strong as it could have been. The game was so good, and they got to the ending and were just like, and that's how it ends. All right. But Burial at Sea, holy smokes, like they pulled it together really well within that one, like not just even pulling together the Bioshock individual worlds, but also just like reasons and why people are doing things the way they are. Like the characters are just like got that much more rich, especially when you play the second part. Like the first part's fun, you know, more Bioshock Infinite, kind of cool. But then in the second part, you're playing as Elizabeth
in Rapture.
Yeah, you're Bioshock Infinite in Rapture, and that's like kind of like whoa, that was just really cool. But then, like, switching over to playing as Elizabeth in the second part,
yeah,
like, that was just like, where has this game been all this time? Like, this game is awesome! Like, this That's is, cool. like, a really good follow-on to, like, the fantastic gameplay of the of regular Infinite, and like this, like like
a little more stealth,
a lot more stealth. Wife and I were talking about it, and she's like, "Yeah, it's sort of like BioShock Isolation mixing Alien Isolation with BioShock." So, yeah, and once that dawned on me, like, yeah, that is kind of how it is, and it's all the best like of both like mushed together. Like, you know, it's like the style of play like emulates a lot of these feelings, but it's like it's you versus odds that are much greater than yourself if you try to go forward. And I actually played it at one level higher than just medium, so that was kind of fun.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I was actually fascinated that throughout the entire second part, I didn't use any of the lethal weapons. I was strictly non-lethal. So I'm like, oh, I just realized that. Because like once you learn how to use like the Peeping Tom plasma, which allows you to like scope out the scene of enemies.
Oh yeah.
Without necessarily revealing, putting yourself out in the open, like that opens up all sorts of possibilities for like sneaking up and knocking people out, and or like standing out just in view enough that they're like, hey, there's somebody over there, and then hiding behind them and then springing on them and taking them down that way. Because they did not give you enough trank bolts, but it is kind of nice that you can like reclaim them off of the bodies when you scavenge them. But at least up to a point. But yeah, go on.
So what drew you back to playing that? Like,
Well, once I reminded myself that, I got the season pass on sale a little while ago.
Okay.
And I'm like, seeing like Rapture with that graphics engine is going to be awesome. And it was. So that was really what drew me in first. Was like kind of wanting to like just try it out, like see what it looks like. And then I'm like,
you were in the mood for that?
Yeah, I was in the mood for seeing like, you know, high-end Rapture. I'm like, and it was kind of cool because it was Rapture before, kind of like before BioShock 1. So it's sort of like still in kind of the like the heyday. You know, the splicers haven't taken over and stuff like that. So it was kind of interesting seeing sort of clean world version Rapture where it's like still kind of like happy, so to speak. So yeah, just like jumping into that, and then I got to the end of the first part, and I'm kind of like, well, that's an ending. I'm not sure I'd like that ending. Yeah, because it's very much like the ending of the BioShock core game, BioShock Infinite core game. I'm like, okay, it was all right. And then I played the second part, and was like, oh, this, yes, you were setting up this. Okay, I forgive you. Everything, every bad thing I said, I take back because this is so good.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It does still do some weird mind bending stuff when you see when you're riding an elevator and you see your characters from BioShock Infinite before doing it in the same place at the same time, going in different direction. Like, yeah, wait a minute, that's me. Okay, my brain's just a little bit melty right now. Let's just go back to gambling. Okay, here we go. But yeah, it was really satisfying. I was a little bit surprised that in some ways it wasn't until you made Elizabeth the main character, playable character, that like the central playable character, that you had the option of being a non-lethal character. I was like, that's kind of like, I wonder why that became a thing right then. But at the same time, it changed the gameplay a lot. And, you know, it was an opportunity to do so because you're changing main character. You're not playing a soldier. So I was like, I could kind of see why, like, just logically they did it. But just sort of I wonder why when it became Elizabeth's turn, they had the option of, yeah, you don't have to kill every single thing in sight. Still, good game.
Nice. Play
it. I recommend it.
GG.
Yeah.
Okay. The Food and Drug Administration advises you to beware of health fraud. Be suspicious of products that claim to cure many diseases or that promise quick fixes. Remember that success stories are easy to make up, and more information is available at www.fda.gov/health fraud.
It's good. Good words to live by.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I want to be careful.
for those quick fixes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Snake oils, salesmen.
No, I still swear by snake oil. Stuff's good.
What do you use it on?
You name it.
Oh, what man. Don't you use it on? That's
I
no
question.
Oh, man.
I stopped clipping my nails a while back. I just like put them in the snake oil.
Oh, wow.
Perfect cuticles every time.
Nice. You
never have to worry about anything.
Well, on that note, let's take a music break, and then we'll come back with more Robots Attack, unless there was anything else gents wanted to mention you did or saw or anything.
Nah, I think I'm good for now.
All right, sounds good. All right, we'll be back with more Robots Attack right after some music. Stick around.
You're listening to Robots Attack. Follow them on Twitter at Robots Attack Me. Email them at robotsattackshow@gmail.com. Like them on Facebook. And check out the website at robotsattack.me.
Alrighty, welcome back to Robots Attack here on KSU Santa Clara. Let's give them some new releases, shall we, gents?
Whee!
Alright, in the theater we've got Entourage, movie star Vincent Chase. Oh, I know you're super excited for this, Jason. Vincent Chase, together with his boys, Eric Turtle and Johnny, are back. And back in business with super agent turned studio head Ari Gold.
Oh, yeah.
Some of their ambitions have changed, but the bond between them remains strong as they navigate the capricious and often cutthroat world of Hollywood.
That's what it takes.
Mm. And we have... Thank you for correcting me.
I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Otherwise, I'd said no.
dare you.
If that doesn't interest you, maybe a pigeon sat on a branch reflecting on existence.
I was going to say branch.
Sam and Jonathan, a pair of hapless novelty salesmen, take us on a kaleidoscope tour of the human. I have to apologize to the audience. We've switched our notes, and I'm not really liking this text as much as the other one. But anyway, kaleidoscope tour of the human condition, reality and fantasy, unfolding in absurdist episodes. A sing-along at a 1940s beer hall, a randy flamenco teacher, a thirsty King Charles XII of Sweden en route to battle, and a diabolical metaphor for the horrors inflicted by European colonialism is a journey that unveils the beauty of single moments, bitterness of others, life's grandeur, and the humor and tragedy hidden within us all.
That's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ambitious, this movie is.
Very ambitious. We also have the third chapter in the Insidious films. This one is a chilling prequel. Said before the haunting of the Lambert family reveals how gifted psychic Elise reluctantly agrees to use her ability to contact the dead in order to help a teenage girl who has been targeted by a dangerous supernatural entity. And then finally we have Spy. Suzanne Cooper is an unassuming desk-bound CIA analyst and the unsung hero behind the agency's most dangerous missions. But when her partner falls... Man, I do not like this text. But when her partner falls off the grid and another top agent is compromised, she volunteers to go deep undercover to infiltrate the world of a deadly arms dealer and prevent a global disaster. There you go. Handful of some movies coming to theater. What do we have on Blu-ray and DVD, Caleb?
Well, on Blu-ray and DVD, you might find Jupiter Ascending. It's a seemingly ordinary woman, but discovers that she is the tipping point in a struggle that spans the cosmos.
What?
Like Spy, except with like cosmic things.
Mm-hmm. And hover shoes. And Channing Tatum.
What? Channing Tatum or Jason Statham?
Mm-hmm.
Which one do you
want? Something else you might find in your disc collection is McFarland, USA, also on Blu-ray and DVD. It's based on a true story, like most of these sports movies are, about an almost unknown town in the central California Valley, in which a group of students finds a new meaning as they strive to become an amazing cross-country running team. This deepening of their personal pride reaches their families, their school, and their community. You know, a sports movie.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt for just a second. I'm just trying to imagine like them trying to sell a movie that's a sports movie that's nothing but fiction. Like how that would even sound. Like, yes, in a completely made up sports movie.
Major League?
Not that's based on anything of realness.
Yeah, I'm yeah. But let's see. Also on Blu-ray and DVD is the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water.
Based on a true story.
Totally based on a true story. While he may not have a spine, SpongeBob makes up for it with heart. This time he's taking the adventure ashore heart. As he and his friends embark on the most superheroic adventure ever. And if you want something just a little bit different from that, perhaps you would... Want to pick up The Wire, the complete series on Blu-ray now.
Yeah, that's different.
Mm-hmm. One of the most compelling shows on television has been brought together in Blu-ray glory.
Ooh. I'm really interested to see how that turns out since like it's before they changed aspect ratio on television.
Mm-hmm.
And the creator of the series was really adamant about never changing it. So I kind of want to see at least a little bit of it on Blu-ray to see if... somebody made him angry or not. meanwhile, in video game releases, I had mentioned it once before, but it's coming to Xbox One and for a limited time is absolutely free to you if you actually have the gold service on Xbox. Massive Chalice is coming out. It's Double Fine's generational tactical turn-based game that spans hundreds of years.
What?
An empire is threatened by a foe so tough and tenacious that the families raise their children to continue the fight. Meanwhile, in something anti-family, sort of, Hatred has been released. A single man is on a personal mission to slaughter the unprepared citizens and law enforcement of his town. Controversial seems to be what Hatred is really shooting for.
Literally.
Sorry for the pun on that one. But other than that, with no shooting involved that I know of, but kind of some odd themes, The Swapper is coming out, or actually was released yesterday, on Xbox One. You can generate up to 4 clones of yourself that mimic your every move and swap into them at will in order to solve environmental puzzles. This is the final incarnation of the game and kind of going to show that Xbox One's parody clause isn't ironclad. So, okay, this one isn't an official release, but I thought it was kind of a big deal, so I'm going to mention it anyway. Mm. Lego Worlds. Steam Early Access is getting a crack at it. It's basically Minecraft, except
branded
as Lego bricks.
Mm.
And that what makes that even more interesting is that Lego just secured a deal and is now selling Minecraft-themed Lego sets. So,
ow.
I don't know how Minecraft feels about them treading on their territory.
But this is like Toy Inception. It's like...
right, Toyception.
Yeah.
But everything I've seen of it looks really cool, like you'd expect Lego to be. It looks like they put a lot more emphasis on making crafting the world a lot more easy to do and make it really interesting really quick, which is something that kind of takes me out of Minecraft in the first place. Finally, we have, I'm sure for all Blizzard fans, a really huge deal. Heroes of the Storm drops tomorrow. Efforts have been made to streamline the MOBA genre and allow for every what-if battle in the Blizzard book.
Blizzard Heroes Clash.
It looks pretty cool, I won't lie.
It does look kind of cool. So, speaking of books and what-ifs and heroes, maybe you want to pick up some comic books. Here's something to add. Here's a few you might want to add to your pull list. Over at DC, it's The Omega Men, number 1. This begins a new miniseries featuring the duo that took out White Lantern Kyle Rayner. An act which the universe demands justice, but Might there be a greater purpose behind their actions?
Wait, there was a White Lantern?
Yep.
Huh.
I
do not know enough about comics. I'm finding out very quickly.
Well, the Blackest Nights and the storyline was where they got a lot more branches of the colors of the lantern system.
So is white vulnerable to black, or is there some other color? Or is it red or blue?
I don't know if it has any particular vulnerability. Black sort of supersedes almost everything because it was the... It reanimates the dead, so...
Okay. And, well, white should be, like, the presence of all color, right?
Yeah, so I was like saying, it's more like that. Then it becomes the absence or the presence of, as opposed to the...
I love getting into theological discussions about characters that I have no idea about.
Anyway, over at Marvel Comics, you might be considering picking up Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows, number one. As the Secret Wars reach out into all the areas of the Marvel Universe, the tendrils begin to wind around the fragile world of Peter, and Mary Jane Parker and their daughter. Partially in honor of Joe's streaming is The Witcher, Fox Children, number 3 of 5. So it's a mini-series, so you can probably still find them all. The Fox Mother leads the sinners into the arms of doom, but her rage has her rage blinded her to the balance of justice? And will her cunning wiles bring Geralt and the crew of the Prophet into her swamp of despair?
Right, I actually have a comics one, if you don't mind.
Sure, throw it in.
It's not necessarily this week, I guess, but it is coming out this month, and it's a big deal for me. The Rebirth of Runaways, sort of. Basically, Runaways is starting up a number one for the Battle World. And so it's kind of an interesting slant on the entire team. It seems to be the team is run by Molly Hayes instead.
Oh,
and they're, in general, seem to be much younger heroes, although they are also populated by Jubilee, Bucky Barnes, Cloak and Dagger, and Amadeus Cho and Scar with 2 A's.
Hmm.
So yeah, it looks like it's kind of the classic Runaways plot, except now that Battleworld is
a thing,
populated with Doom at the head of everything. It's, I think, them running away from Doom. So.
Doom, yes.
But who knows? It looks interesting to me.
Yeah, good call. Over at Image, it's Airboy, number 1. The Golden Age title Airboy is set for a reboot and relaunch. I knew better to helm the title than James Robinson. If only James could figure out why he's stuck doing another Golden Age reboot, he might be able to get out of the gig. Or maybe he'll just have another drink and try and forget why his life seems to have fallen down. Over at IDW, it's Bravo for Adventure, the hardcover edition. This collects the full Bravo series... Bravo for Adventure series, the adventures of Jesse Bravo, Knockabout Pilot, and Adventure Seeker that haven't been in print for 30 years.
Whoa. Huh.
This collection features never before seen behind the pages, look at early sketches, color tests, and story fragments that never quite made it to print. And our fine friends at Wow Cool have a few suggestions for us this week as well.
Nice.
They also recommend Alex Toth's Bravo for Adventure collection. Then they also mention Nate Simpson's Non-Player number 2. It's finally out, and if you're looking for number 1, they have a copy at their store.
Sweet.
And then he says, breaking with tradition, they have a Marvel pick. It's Fred Hembeck's House of Hem. Hembeck does sort of kind of like the Marvel Babies kind of idea, where he's like, it's satirical spins on the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
In a more cartoony fashion. It looks pretty good. And as he calls it, the wallet buster this week is Drawn and Quarterly's 25th anniversary book. Mm-hmm. Drawn and Quarterly is a well-established, obviously, annual collection of the independent comics. A lot of the independent creators have been featured in Drawn and Quarterly, and some of the mainline ones as well. But it's about illustration and the arts and what its whole deal. So there you go.
And so this is the big version of something that's already quite large. That's what I'm hearing.
This is an even bigger version of something that's already quite large, okay. Yes.
That nice. Makes some sense then.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of art.
Yes. On Thursday, June 11th at 7 p.m., artist Naomi Kramer will give an informal talk and tour of her new solo exhibition, Age of Entanglement. The exhibition consists of hybrid projects, paintings, and new media works. The event is free for students. Get tickets on the ICA website or at sjica.org. This event is wheelchair accessible.
Very cool.
Nice. All right, I'll wrap us up with some music. We've got Before the World Was Big by Girlpool. Debut full-length release for the Los Angeles-based duo of Cleo Tucker and Harmony Tividad. We've got How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful by Florence and the Machine, produced by Marcus Drafts. The third full-length release for the British indie rock band features contributions from Paul Epworth, Kid Harpoon, and John Hill. Got Last of Our Kind by The Darkness, fourth full-length release for the British rock band led by Justin Hawkins, was produced by guitarist Dan Hawkins. We've got Starfire by Jaga Jazzis, the sixth studio release for the Norwegian experimental jazz ensemble, was inspired by Lars Hornthwaite's move to Los Angeles.
Okay. Hmm. That'll do it.
And then finally we have In Color by Jamie XX, the debut full-length solo release for the XX. Jamie Smith features guest appearances from Pop Can, Young Thug, as well as his XX bandmates, Rami Croft and Oliver Sim. All right, so that's some new releases. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for...
news.
That's right. So, what are we giving to him first?
I'm going to throw down a story from NASA.
What?
Yep.
NASA?
No, not from them.
Yes, from them. They have developed a new system for airplane wings.
Man, they always want to make new stuff. They never want to go with anything reliable.
This new system is... called the Adaptive Compliant Trailing Edge. Now, that doesn't sound like it'd be very impressive, but what it does is it makes the wing itself reshape to become a control surface. So instead of having flaps that have to lift and push against the forces of the wing and air pressure and friction, they actually just reshape the wing material itself.
How T-1000 is this, or not it at all?
I don't think it's necessarily T-1000, more as, although it's not probably not
quite.
Is it quite
a series of tubes?
Tubes are probably involved, but okay. I don't know if it's a series of tubes per se. The it's not quite as malleable as say the T-1000, but it is more malleable than plane wings have been for quite some time. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
What's also interesting about this is that it can be retrofitted onto existing airplanes, and it can save lots in weight. It can save almost 22 pounds per thing. So instead of having all the extra hydraulics and metal and stuff to move wing bits around, you can just have the wing itself become the control surface and then become even more of the singular control surface.
That rules out a series of tubes, because if they're replacing the series of tubes.
Yeah, well, it'll be yet to see how far it goes, and because retrofitting stuff is never inexpensive, but this could be really cool.
I guess I was wondering, like, the tech, is it based on, like, electricity pulsing through it or something like that? Or we can find out later.
Yeah, I'm not positive from this particular article, but they're saying that this will also they're not having to like break up the shape of the wing as much, it actually reduces drag and improves aerodynamics, which at the end savings in fuel, savings in time, et cetera, et cetera. They've completed over 22 different flights using refitted Gulfstream 3 jet.
Okay. Respectable.
Mm-hmm. It looks like one of those small private jets. But they've proven that the system actually works. I mean, beyond just like, you know, literally working, it actually is creating savings. And if they, I'm sure if with a little bit more effort into scaling it up, I'm sure that it won't be too long before some of the mainliners or the or some of the more cargo based planes like the UPS and FedEx fly might be starting to use some of this stuff to improve their fleet as well. So it's exciting seeing like future technology, kind of like the idea of the, like the swing wing was like kind of like really big for a while, and now it's sort of like the idea of a malleable
that
wing.
That came out in the 20s, like bump, bump,
not
bump,
quite,
bump.
More like early 90s, late 80s.
Oh,
but
okay. I guess there was a little bit of a resurgence then too. Okay.
This could be like an interesting spin on, and you know, making flight even more accessible, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. And that airplane, it's popularly known as the G3, since it's Gulfstream 3. Maybe eventually they'll be able to get it into like a G6. Or
mm-hmm. Then they can all bump that tune as they fly across the air.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Speaking of things that you're welcome about, if you want to listen to KSU even when you're not near a radio, you can stream us whenever you want at KSU.org or on the TuneIn Radio app or website, and never be without the underground sound. And like that story, Caleb,
mm-hmm.
I imagine has some cool visuals, some cool pictures.
It does have a pretty nice picture of the plane, and you can see.
We're going to go to check it out.
If you want to see it, go to facebook.com/robotsattackshow or twitter.com/robotsattackme. The link will be going up there, and you can check it out at your leisure, and nice. Eventually it'll also show up on our website, but those are the places you can go right now to find it.
Nice.
Okay. This is a story that was alluded to earlier, but it was too priceless for me not to touch on a little bit further. Big Trouble in Little China looks like it's probably like 90% positively going to get remade at this point.
Huh.
It's got slated for the writing already proven quantities by the names of Ashley Miller and Jack Stance, who have the credits for the X-Men First Class under their belt at this point. And they managed to get, as was mentioned earlier, The Rock on board. What's kind of interesting about this to me is that apparently this is one of The Rock's favorite movies of all time. So the fact that he's really interested in remaking it, that's kind of interesting to begin with right there. Because a lot of people are really protective of stuff like that, me included to a certain amount. But at the same time, I'd really like to see The Rock's take on that sort of Kurt Russell trekker character. I assume that's who they're shooting for, and maybe he's going to be the little ninja guy. I don't know. but yeah, it definitely looks like something I'm going to have to check out personally just because of the spectacle of it.
That sounds like quite the thing.
Yeah, it's weird. I like recently rewatched that. Like
I
had it like on in the background to just like, while I was going to do some other stuff, I was like, oh, I just need something to put on. I threw it on, and then I finished that other stuff and was like, oh, all right, I'll just watch the rest of this. And yeah, it was so weird. Like, I know as a kid, like, super loved that movie. Like, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I, you know, never got bored of watching it. Like, ah, Egg Shen, you know, like Curls of Jack, you know, and like rewatching it now, I was like, I'm wondering if they were going for that sort of...
Oh, it's impossible to tell with him writing and directing, but...
Yeah, if they were going for that, like, I don't want to say noir, but like that, it's really got that sort of old, like, man's man, lady, like, feel to the characters.
Right.
But just set kind of in a very different, you know, setting.
More modern era. More modern.
Yeah.
Well, it's a weird sort of throwback in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's what I'm wondering. Like, was that what they were going for, or is it just silly because I'm watching it like, wow, this is really, because as a little kid, I didn't catch any of that stuff. It was just like, oh, wow, oh, look at the cool little stuff. And I'm watching now like, wow, it's cheesy. Like, but
yeah.
But is that what they were like? Were those the kind of films they were going for? Like that kind of style with the characters, or, you know,
I usually give people credit along those lines. So I'm going to say yes, but who knows for sure. Part of what I'm actually interested to see in this movie also is how they're going to handle that, since it's become like sort of uncool in certain circles to have the manly man type character.
It's not.
and The Rock has played with that sort of thing in the past also, with kind of diminishing that sort of character, even though he's obviously like one of the most manly of men that there is out there. So it'll be really interesting to see this take on it. Yeah,
because it's like, it's not that the Gracie Law character is like a horrible character, but I mean, she does some stuff, but it's not very progressive. Like,
it's not modern.
Yeah.
Like, by today's standards.
Yeah. But if you look back,
the female characters in that, necessarily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look back, like, oh, if they were kind of modeling it after those movies, then it's like, oh, then it kind of makes sense as far as, like, a character sort of.
It always struck me as, like, a Pulp Fiction, like, type of novel type thing.
I remember seeing an interview with the director, like, long time ago, and it sounded like he was sort of playing with some of those, like, images.
Did you just
and
make
type
that up?
No.
Who's the director then? Because I think you made it up.
but the things that stuck out to me was that when you talked about Kurt Russell's character, he's like going on, like, something about this performance seemed kind of familiar. Like, he was trying to figure out who, like, Kurt Russell was kind of reminding him of, and then it dawned on him he was doing sort of a vague nod to
Chaplin.
No, the Duke.
Bridget Fonda.
John Wayne?
Yes, John Wayne. So I'm like, I think they were somewhat aware of what they were doing through.
He outright does impressions of him at certain points in that movie, too, if I remember right. But I'm really interested to see a shift on John Carpenter's point of view on that movie.
All right. Well, from a classic film being remade, rebooted.
Classic, with air quotes.
Hey, it's classic.
It is to us.
Yeah. To a
cult classic.
Yeah.
Still classic.
Right.
Classic. It's sort of a series. It had a sequel, but another cult classic.
Okay.
Not getting remade or rebooted.
Oh, right. Yes.
It looks like Disney's pulling the plug on Tron 3. So,
Boo. If
you had high hopes for...
Yes! Wait, no, I wasn't supposed to say that, right?
Looks like, according to The Hollywood Reporter, Disney has pulled the plug on the sci-fi sequel, while the studio is said to have never officially greenlit Tron 3. Production was gearing up to begin this fall, likely in Vancouver. Tron Legacy Helmer Joseph Kosinski was expected back to direct, and Garrett Hedlund and Olivia Wilde were to reprise their roles. Hollywood Reporter even claims that, quote, Disney had been interested in adding Jared Leto to the cast, but an offer and negotiations had never commenced. The site speculates the recent box office stumble of Tomorrowland may have contributed to Disney's decision to nix the project.
Yeah, I saw a similar article from Variety, and the source that they were talking to cited that there just wasn't space in their already kind of overflowing docket of films that they're making to put the movie. So, like, we can't greenlight something. Never was greenlit, and there's just no space for it, so we're just going to have to...
In another 10 years, they're going to do another one of those little proof concept things, and it's going to get reborn. I can almost guarantee it.
I would not be sad about that.
So yes, I know that hits you very hard.
I was hoping, I realize it wasn't the most wildly successful film, but it definitely made a return on its investment, and I think it could have done another one. It would have been fun.
Yeah, I was really surprised, like, especially after that movie, I expected it to launch Olivia Wilde a little bit better than it did. Like, she popped up in a lot of stuff, but she never ended up becoming, like, a big name or anything. So I'm surprised that it doesn't make it easier to make the movie, since none of the actors became, like, really big name actors in the last little while either. So can't demand, like, millions and millions of dollars for it.
Yeah, I guess they're not too worried with the Marvels and the Star Wars movies that they're working on now.
Like, that's true. Like,
all of this is basically just going to, like, print money for us, so we don't need to worry about that thing that might make some money.
Right. When, how many years before they clear all of the Star Wars movies?
It's going to be a while.
There's, what, 7 this year?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then standalone next year.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then 8 and the standalone. And then 9. So at least 5.
Okay.
So every year for the next 5 years, there will be a Star Wars movie.
Okay. So.
And then throw in like 2 Marvel movies during those years also. So
those are going to be like fairly big ones too. So it's like, yeah.
And
so, yeah, like
sprinkle a few Pixar movies in
like
there.
10 it's years like, and we're back in business. Yeah. Like I said.
Yeah.
When everyone's forgotten about Tron, though. They'll reboot it.
Yeah, right. Well, that's sort of what happened last time.
Yeah.
Let's see. In the realm of things that are kind of creepy, but I can understand how useful they'd be, especially to somebody who is considering getting one of these at some point. People have finally come up with a sketchbook that is specifically made for tattoo artists.
Okay.
And what's special about it is...
What's so specific about this particular sketchbook?
Each of the pages is made of synthetic skin.
So they made the Necronomicon.
Yeah, that's what I was...
Yeah, yeah, like, kinda. Oh,
you're clearly not going to say, like, it's made of human skin. Right.
Well, we don't know exactly what it's made of.
But it's made...
The knockoff versions of it, we might not want to look into too terribly close.
Ah.
But yeah, let's see. Tattoo Art Magazine apparently commissioned an ad agency to help put together this book. I wouldn't have went that direction myself, but hey, maybe it's a particularly skilled ad agency with lots of access to synthetic skin. Who knows? But yeah, it is incredibly valuable just from the standpoint of tattoo artists being able to practice their trade on something that resembles human skin, so they can find out what sort of colors actually work and clash with human skin and not actually do their brainstorming on people, which I'm sure we've seen one too many times. So, yeah, future bad tattooed victims are probably fairly happy that this exists. Well, I guess possible future bad tattoo victims who were saved. I don't know how to word that perfectly, but you get the point out there.
That's quite the thing. Wow. Like, wow.
Okay, so the very first image, right?
The very first comment on the article that I got this from was somebody posted a picture of the Necronomicon
from Army of Darkness.
Yeah,
yes, that is totally awesome. Alrighty, so let's see. Transitioning from that to batteries. Why? Because physics. There is with all this new technology shrinking at an exponential rate, it feels like, you know, each time there's a new phone, it's thinner, smaller, but bigger at the same time.
Same with sketchbooks made of skin.
Exactly.
Always getting smaller all the time.
Yeah. A group has made a new type of battery at the University of Illinois.
It looks like a piece of plastic.
Well, it's embedded in a piece of plastic right now. The thing is...
Is that to make it safe for people?
Well, it's probably so that you actually can, like, see it.
Oh, okay. I'll just interrupt you a few more times.
Yeah. The process that makes this thing kind of interesting is that it's combining two different types of 3D holographic lithography and 2D photolithography to create a micro battery. And this micro battery might sound like, why do I want to bother with this? But this, like, as more technology gets compressed into a single piece of silicon, you get the whole the more and more systems are now what they call system on a chip, where the graphics card, the memory, the main processor, most of the all the core functions exist on a single piece of silicon.
Okay.
This is also partly what makes the Internet of Things kind of a thing, is that you have a system that can connect with other systems on a very small device. But how do you power said devices? Mm. And or like,
good question.
With fusion.
Well, there is solar power, yes, but that's a different issue. this and like medical technologies, like they're all power reliant, but batteries are kind of big by comparison. This one is incredibly small.
Okay.
So this is like micro scale devices. My thought is probably medical technology and or Internet of Things is probably where this is going to show up most. So it's the thing plugs into, doesn't need to necessarily have a power source near it per se, because it has the battery built in. You don't need to add batteries to it or plug it in. It has the battery in it, and it will supply its own charge.
Okay.
It sounds perfect for like micro machines and like nanites.
Mm-hmm. Like eventually, it might
running
get down
through your veins, scrubbing them out like little chimney sweeps.
Mm-hmm. It might eventually get down there, but I could definitely see this being like a big part of like upcoming diagnostic chips and stuff that might be used on inside like a person, like say people that have diabetes, instead of having to constantly be checking their blood with a pinprick, they can have a device that is self-powered, embedded, and very small, and it can do all of the checking and processing all on its own, and possibly like even have the insulin, like, you know, the whole like insulin injector pack and check is all done in one device that might be like, you know, not even like a hip pack anymore. It might be just like a little small thing. Then
you, sir, are a visionary.
This is all blue sky. This is still a very new technology, but this is the kind of things that we're pushing towards a future where power is inside the device itself, and it's almost as small as the device itself. Like, you know, if you've seen someone open up a cell phone and point out where the CPU is, like that one little chip has 99% of the cell phone on it itself. So
you, sir, need one of those Tomorrowland pins.
That would be kind of awesome. Not gonna lie.
And meanwhile, San Jose Animal Advocates needs you. Are you an animal lover who wants to help homeless animals find their forever homes but have limited time to volunteer? Join San Jose Animal Advocates, a local nonprofit that is building a community network to help find loving, foster, and forever homes for pets in our local shelters. With your help, we can save countless animals. All it takes is a few clicks, and you can share their stories with your network of friends. It's easy. Join us at SJ Animal Advocates.org, or look for us on Facebook.
So last time I proposed the question of, you know, why do animals eat poop?
You know, yes,
it was
and
asked
good
by
times
someone,
were had by all.
Oh yeah. Well, and someone else asked another question. Do bugs sleep? And according to a biologist, Barrett Klein from University of Wisconsin, yes, with an asterisk next to it.
Uh-huh.
They study the sleeping lives of honeybees, paper wasps, cockroaches, praying mantises, and fruit flies are among insects that doze. Fruit fly sleep is even similar to mammal sleep. Since the flies respond to sleep-inducing chemicals and caffeine, just like people, Klein says.
I'm totally feeding all of my fruit flies caffeine from now on.
Yeah.
Get all jittery.
Still, measuring sleep in insects is tricky. It's not always easy, for instance, to differentiate. Yes, thank you. Between sleep and sleep-like states. Bug bedtime. Signs of true bug sleep are not moving, drooping in the direction of gravity, and more relaxed muscles. Another indicator is, quote, increased arousal threshold, or how long it takes to jar the bug to alertness. Experiments in fruit flies also show that they experience sleep rebound, Klein says. That means that a fruit fly deprived of sleep will subsequently need it more, something most of us busy people can understand. Katie Prudick, a biologist at Oregon State University, adds that butterflies rest, but we don't know if they sleep. While butterflies rest in the evening, they also, quote, can't move when it goes below a certain temperature, a state that looks like sleep but is a different type of dormancy called a torpor. Bees need Z's. Butterflies put themselves to bed in the late afternoon, Prudick says, hanging from such hiding places as leaves, bark, or even beer cans. Without adequate rest, they won't...
That's why I leave my beer cans around, just for the butterflies.
That's why, just for the butterflies.
The butterfly beer can garden?
Yeah.
So beautiful. They won't forage as well, and females will lay eggs on the wrong plants for their caterpillar offspring to eat.
Like just, the beer cans.
Go on, butterfly,
filled with
drunk.
Caffeine.
Go on, butterfly, you're drunk. Just as sleep deprivation is a serious issue for humans, insects suffer from its consequences as well. In a 2010 study, Klein looked at sleep deprivation in honeybees, creating quite a super villainous sounding machine to do so, the Insominator. In his experiments, magnets in the Insominator disturbed the sleep of bees tagged with steel, while their nestmates tagged with copper got plenty of rest. Bees inform each other about food sources and potential nest sites through a movement called a waggle dance. The study showed sleep-deprived bees behaved quite differently than bees with the more precise directional information. For instance, the sleepy bees' dances were not as detailed and thus not as helpful as those of the bees that slept soundly. There's even a video.
Sounds like a bad name to me, the sleepy bees.
Yeah. There's even a video included in the article if you want to check it out. Yeah, so, yes, if someone does ask you, do bugs sleep? Yes. Well, there is a little asterisk next to it. So.
Okay. Well, there you go then.
Okay, so there's been a ton of stories swirling around the last little while that we'd consider rumor mill stories, especially in the video game industry, but there has been a certain amount of credence lent to these stories, and everybody and their mom is picking them up and turning them into real news, so I am going to treat it no different.
Why not?
This isn't related to yours, but if you want to do yours right after, then it would work pretty good. The current Nintendo hardware that's going to be used for the NX system is apparently being considered to be, they're considering using Android OS as the operating system for the new NX Nintendo.
What?
Yes.
Huh.
There's a bunch of things that people pulled together from different comments that Nintendo has made over the last few months about their ideas for the next system that kind of lend themselves to this making a lot of sense. And this is coming from one of Japan's largest newspapers. I believe it's pronounced Nikkei.
Yes.
They cobbled together most of this stuff from those comments from Nintendo. But, okay, let's see if I can lay it out in a fairly rational way. Nintendo has had a lot of complaints from people trying to develop for them that they are now effectively the only real proprietary system out there anymore.
And add to that that their Wii U has a really atypical processor that ends up breaking things into three different layers of information, which is a really odd number of ways to do things.
Okay.
It's still using a PowerPC processor, isn't it?
It is, but apparently the number of cores is what's throwing it off, because normally it's...
even numbers.
Exactly. And a lot of that is credited to Nintendo trying to keep their stuff safe. Like, they want to make it so it's not that easy to crack and spread around, which apparently has worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
So, the kind of downside of it is, of course, all of the people don't want to work with it because it's way more difficult to work with. They need specialized hardware in order to do all of the stuff associated with the games, and they can just work with every other system out there much easier.
Right. Plus, especially since both PS4 and the Xbox are now running off of effectively Intel chips. Not exactly, but they're running the same core instructions.
And so anyway, it just makes it much easier for people to try and break into the normal PC market or any of the other console markets. But, of course, the thing that exploding like crazy right now is the mobile market. Now, of course, they can't very easily team up with Apple, so Android OS being free and still having lots and lots of options on its side ends up being a viable option for being something that they can add into their own environment really easily and make it so it's super friendly for people to develop for their system. So effectively, the next Wii could end up being really similar to an Ouya, except maybe hopefully souped up a little bit.
One can only hope.
Right.
Probably won't be running it off of a cell phone processor, so there's that.
Well, okay, that's part of the other stuff, is that other comments that Nintendo has made end up kind of shifting both directions. They could make it so when you cobble it all together, it makes a little bit more sense as far as the bigger picture of things, because, like I mentioned before, Nintendo has always stressed, even down to the architecture level, making their stuff more difficult to crack so they can protect their stuff a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now the idea that's being thrown around, since they've already mentioned that they seem to be pretty committed to staying with the PowerPC line, which is kind of odd, but it's, again, another layer that makes it more difficult for people to crack games and use them. However,
yeah,
especially apparently with the odd number of processors, it makes it so if they can use that sort of pressure, that sort of processor adapted to the Android operating system, they'd have kind of the best of both worlds. They could have people develop for it more easily, but at the same time have it so it's buckled down to their own standards so that it can't be spread around like wildfire, which is a huge problem apparently for the Android market. Piracy is insane numbers on it. So it's definitely still in major rumorville land right now, but a lot of the elements kind of fit together in a weird sort of way. So
there's a lot of smoke for there to be no fire.
Yes, I think. Yes, that. So I don't know. Do you want to follow up with that story?
My story was a story that was in rumorville, which now has left rumorville. Pretty much not happening. That story is there's a rumor going around that Microsoft was purchasing Silent Hills, the game that Guillermo del Toro and Hideo Kojima were, you know, teamed up together to do. It was like the tease at the end of the PT demo, quote unquote.
Right.
And, you know, everyone was super excited. And then when Konami, like, canceled that and canceled a lot of other things and kind of looked like
canceled
they were shifting
big name gaming
stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it pretty much died. And so but then there was this rumor going around that, oh, Microsoft is going to get it and it's going to be an Xbox One exclusive. And that was floating around. There was like someone reported to Rooster Teeth, I think it was originally.
Right.
Like, so that was their source and said it was going to, Microsoft was buying it for billions or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, the, but Head of Xbox, Phil Spencer, came out and said, sorry, this isn't true. I'm not sure where the rumor started, but I don't want to mislead anyone. And so there was, you know, a lot of kind of talk, especially since like E3 is coming up, that like,
right.
Oh, you know, they took the PT demo down from the PlayStation Network. And so there was, you know, talk of like, well, this was a sign of faith between exactly. Konami and Microsoft sort of thing. But it was like, when I read a little bit of it, and then when I saw that like billions, it's like,
yeah, that
okay.
was the kind of throw.
Yeah, that was because I mean they spent stinks. Billions on Minecraft, but that's Minecraft. Like this is like Silent Hills. Like not even like the IP of Silent Hill. Like even then, if it were,
well, I believe it was supposed to be the IP, but
okay, even then that would be like way too much money. I think for that IP, I don't know if they could make it. I don't know.
Well, see, here's the thing. Since Kojima is effectively a free agent, they could effectively get the IP and the guy who ran it. So
yeah.
It might make it viable really quickly if they could team those two up. And the other thing that people are pointing out, and actually the same people who broke the story, quote-unquote, I just watched a thing with them today, and they're not fully like pulling it because they're still like halfway standing by the person who gave them the information. They don't want to fully disqualify it, apparently, just because they're pointing out. They personally pointed out a few other things that Microsoft has in the past said, nah, when we're not doing this whatsoever. And ends up turning around and doing kind of the opposite within like a week or so. So it'll be interesting to see. I'd still kind of wait on the side of probably not going to happen, but
yeah,
it would be pretty cool if it did.
Yeah. I mean, I think I even tweeted like that IP would definitely fill in a gap that their like first party don't have. Like, I mean, they have an exclusive on Tomb Raider. And that's good. Like, that fills in a gap that their first parties, they don't have. So, since it doesn't look like they're, I mean, there's, like, I think a Kickstarter to possibly maybe reboot Condemned, but they don't have, like, that as, like, you know, their IP.
Right.
But
they don't have a viable survival horror is what it comes down to.
So, like, that would be a nice, you know, a gap filler, and it's a well-established brand name, you know, so, and it could be a good chance to.
And well loved by a lot of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting that the group of guys that posted the story in the first place, they're usually really quick if they find out that something is like been nixed or whatever, they'll post retractions right away. They're not shy about that. And they did post it as a rumor type of thing to begin with, so they don't really feel like they're chained to it in the first place, but they were visibly shy about dismissing it. So it'll be interesting to see, like, who knows what sort of source they actually have or whatnot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but also a lot of these deals, like, they show up and then they get talked about and then they just never come together. I mean, like, how many of those have happened in Hollywood? Like, oh yeah, we're gonna do this thing. 5 years later, oh yeah, that thing. Yeah, we totally forgot that was even a thing. So now it's dead.
Well, the other half of it was there was speculation from the person who is doing the rumor that they wanted it to be a big presentation as a big win at E3.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they can't pull together a deal that fast, but it's still a possibility for the future. It still sort of puts it back on the table. It's just not going to be announced for a very long time, most likely.
Mm-mm.
But it also does make a lot of sense with them pulling PT completely off the market because it doesn't make any sense for them to do that in the first place since it was a free thing to begin with. So
yeah, there's something going on there, whether it's going to turn into...
It does. I mean, I can see why you pull it. It's like, it was to promote a game that like doesn't exist now. So it's like they don't get any, like, it's free. So they don't get any money from people downloading it. It might end up actually costing for hosting it. And it's just promoting a game that doesn't exist anymore. So
yeah,
I can see why they took it down, but this sort of adds an interesting thing. Like, yeah. If that is the case, that, you know, mm-hmm. makes even more sense. Like, oh, if it's going to be Xbox, yeah, pull right. it off of yeah. PlayStation.
It would be a good little bit of leverage.
Leverage?
Yeah.
yeah. Whether it's six-fingered or five-fingered leverage, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Nobody out there will probably get that at all, except for the people in this room.
yeah, I agree. They're probably better off for it. But all right, well, I think that's going to do it for tonight's show. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll be back next week, I think so. I don't know when the summer schedule starts exactly, but...
Soon.
Soon. Do you know when it starts?
I don't know when it starts, but I know there's a meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, I think there's a meeting tomorrow or something. Yeah. But just stick with us, Robots Attack, on where Caleb.
Go to Robots Attack, Facebook.com/Robots Attack Show or Twitter.com/Robots Attack Me. We will keep you appraised there as to what's up.
We will give you the play-by-play.
Or at least let you know what happened at the end.
Play-by-play.
And, of course, what else can they do there?
Well, there you can leave comments, talk about our stories. You can tell us things you would like to see, things you think we've missed.
You can give us the play-by-play.
You can, yes. Or you can email us, robotsattackshow@gmail.com. And finally, if you just want one place for all your Robots Attack, go to robotsattack.me. That is the canonical source of all things Robots Attack. You can get past episodes of our show there. You can check out our other kind of funky show, Around the Water Cooler, and leave comments, connect with us there as well. We also have links to all of our other social media and fun things there as well. Check it out.
All right, that's going to do it for our show. Thanks for listening. Stick around for some great music. And just keep it locked on KSU Santa Clara. You don't need to change it anywhere else.
Nope.
No.
Don't have to. Even nope. Robo DJ.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty good.
Right. Yeah. So just keep it here. Just break your knob off your radio or
right.
whatever.
Set all the buttons to 103.3 FM.
Yeah, that's KSU. Even better because then you don't have to break your radio. Mm-hmm.
Don't break your radio. Just change all the buttons to be the one source, the underground sound.
That's right. All right. Take it easy, everybody.
Raccoon, Baradin, Misto.